Hello, and welcome to Pop DNA, the podcast that explores the historical and literary roots of your favorite movies and TV shows.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rhonda.
And today, we are talking about
Star Wars!
We're a little excited, if you can't tell.
A little bit.
So Star Wars is a huge franchise, obviously. There are currently 11 theatrically released films in the Star Wars franchise. The first of which came out in 1977. Of course, that was the one that started it all, A New Hope. Written and directed by George Lucas, and it starred Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher. And then the most recent film was Solo, A Star Wars Story, and that just came out in 2018. So,
wow,
very large span.
Yeah. There are also many made-for-TV films and animated series, as well as dozens of novels and graphic novels within the Star Wars universe, as well as two upcoming live-action series, The Mandalorian and an as-yet-untitled series, based on characters from Rogue One. But that's just way too much stuff to talk about.
So what we're going to do is we're going to be focusing on the theatrical films that are part of the what's called the Skywalker Saga.
So yes.
Yes, I know it well. So that's the films that have the episode number in the title. So, and then especially emphasizing A New Hope and The Force Awakens, which are episodes 4 and 7, respectively. Mm-hmm. So we just feel like those two films are kind of the biggest milestones or story points in the saga, as well as the two biggest like pop culture moments. Mm-hmm. For the franchise.
So, if you don't like The Force Awakens, or if you're one of those Star Wars fans who doesn't like Star Wars movies and also doesn't like life or, you know, joy, I guess you can stop listening or you can just suck it up and go on this journey with us.
But it always, as always, there will be spoilers, so, you know, do what you need to do. I mean, if you haven't seen Star Wars, I don't know why you would be listening to this anyway, but, you know, just in case. But Erin, do you remember the first time that you ever saw Star Wars?
Yeah, you know, my mother and I went to go see one of, I hate to call it the later movies since now we're in 2018, but I was like born in 91 and then, so I was like 6 or 7 when we went to see it. And we stood in line and it was this whole huge spectacle and I just remember like being in awe of the world that was created. And a huge part of it for me was the puppetry, the heart in those characters, and the realism there. That's kind of what's always stuck with me as we stare at our Chewbacca figurine.
Bedecked in Christmas lights.
Of course, as is fitting. My huge journey into Star Wars was always with the puppetry and the humor there.
So did you see, like, the when they, like, remastered the original trilogy in, like, 97 and released it?
Yes.
In theaters again? Oh, okay, cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
That was, like, a family event for us.
It was so huge that my mother went, and she doesn't go to things outside. So that's how big that event was.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, cool. Rhonda?
Well, I have a very long and storied history Star Wars. The way I remember it, I think I was 3 the first time I saw A New Hope. And again, this is in my memory. I don't know if this is accurate, if this is how it actually happened, but the way I remember it is that my dad, who was a Star Wars fan, like, since the first movie came out, the way that he convinced me to watch it was he told me that there was a princess. So, and of course, I was 3, so I'm like, yeah, I want to
see
it. It's a princess movie, of course. Like, but then, like, the whole time that we were watching it, I remember I was just like, is that, where's the princess? Is the princess going to come here? Like, where is she? So just like, and of course, she's like, I think she's like in the first, like, scene of, of the movie, like, when she's talking to Darth Vader at the beginning. But, like, the rest of the movie after it, because she goes away for a little while, and she doesn't come back, you know, until, like, halfway through the movie. So, like, the whole first half, I'm like, where is she?
Where'd she go?
The princess. So, like, in my mind, Leia has always been the protagonist of Star Wars. I can't see it any other way. So she was my in, like,
a
princess, but also, like, a very like, strong and determined woman.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so there's something we have to get out of the way. So it's very well documented that George Lucas was inspired by Akira Kurosawa's 1958 film, The Hidden Fortress, when he was writing A New Hope. The Hidden Fortress, the story is told from the perspective of these two peasants, Tahai and Matashichi, who, and if I butchered those Japanese names, I apologize. But they're enlisted to assist a samurai general who's charged with guarding his clan's princess as they cross enemy territory. Mm-hmm. So that's the story. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because it is so well documented already. But if you're interested in learning more, we'll post some links so you can actually read a little more about that. But I mean, I can't not mention it, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
We can't do a podcast about the pop DNA of Star Wars and not talk about the Hidden Fortress. So, and I didn't want to touch on something, you know, I didn't want to just, like, not mention it.
Yeah.
But I did want to just touch on something real quick that I found really fascinating, actually, when I was researching. So, the Hidden Fortress is part of a genre of Japanese film and theater called... I looked up the ways to, like, pronounce this word.
Yeah.
Because it's in Japanese, and I don't speak Japanese, but hopefully the pronunciation I found was correct.
Yeah.
But it's Jidakai is what I...
Sounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it translates to era drama or period drama. And more specifically, The Hidden Fortress is part of a subgenre called Chambara, which means... like a sword fight movie.
Yeah.
But in these films, which are set in Japan's feudal era, which is like the Middle Ages in Japan, so we see the archetype of the warrior or samurai. And it's also very well documented that the Jedi in Star Wars are very strongly reminiscent or even inspired by the samurai of feudal Japan.
Yeah.
That's, I'll also link couple articles to that because it was really fascinating. But a blog post written by Brian Young on the Star Wars official website blog quoted a 2001 interview with George Lucas that was done as part of the special features for a DVD release of The Hidden Fortress. So he talks about that film's influence on Star Wars, and this is his quote. I remember the one thing that really struck me about The Hidden Fortress. The one thing I was really intrigued by was the fact that the story was told from the two lowest characters. I decided that would be a nice way to tell the Star Wars story. Take the two lowliest characters, as Kurosawa did, and tell the story from their point of view. Which, in the Star Wars case, is the two droids, so R2 and C-3PO. And that was the strongest influence. The fact that there's a princess trying to get through enemy lines was more of a coincidence than anything else. In my film, the princess is more of a stand-and-fight kind of princess.
Yes.
In the beginning, in one of the first drafts, I did have a little more of her and a Jedi, an older Jedi, trying to escape. But then it evolved into the story of Luke.
Okay.
So you can see, like, from the beginning, like...
Yeah.
George Lucas was going to have Leia be the protagonist. So I feel, like, vindicated.
Yes, because he's a smart man. He knows.
Well, I mean, yeah. He has his moments, but... but speaking of the story of Luke...
Yes.
So it's also very well documented that Star Wars, and especially A New Hope, follows the storytelling... pattern theorized by Joseph Campbell, which is called The Hero's Journey, or the Mono Myth, and that's from his 1949 book, The Hero with the Thousand Faces, which, if you get a chance to read it, also the series that he did in the 80s is on Netflix, you can watch it.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, really, Paris and Beru would be proud.
I've seen clips, but yeah.
The basic structure that he sets out is that a hero ventures forth from the world of common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from this mysterious adventure with the power to bestow boons on his fellow man. Mm-hmm. So, like, boons. I just think that's a funny word. But so Joseph Campbell writes that the hero's journey is found throughout myth and legend and fairy tales from all different countries all over the world.
Yeah.
Star Wars uses this structure to very effectively tell a story that feels like mythology,
yeah.
like we were discussing
yeah.
earlier. Like, it's our modern myth.
Absolutely.
It feels like a fairy tale that just happens to be set in space. I think, in part at least, we have Star Wars and George Lucas to thank for popularizing this way of telling stories that has been used, I think, for some of the best and most beloved works of pop culture, which we'll get into in a little bit. But every Skywalker saga film begins with that phrase, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. This is not so far off from that ubiquitous fairy tale beginning, Once Upon a Time. George Lucas has noted on several occasions he was directly influenced by Campbell's work when writing A New Hope. So it's no surprise that Luke's story very closely aligns with the stages of the hero's journey. But I also wanted to look at The Force Awakens to see if Rey's story follows this structure.
Cool.
So, yeah, because I think she's undoubtedly the hero of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So I wanted to look at her stages. So there's several different versions of the hero's journey stages that different writers have theorized. So this one is from Christopher Vogler, his book, The Writer's Journey, Mythic Structure for Writers. So he's specifically using this to tell you how to tell stories. And this is in 2007. So the original is 1949. This is 2007.
Okay.
So his stages in the hero's journey. The first stage is the ordinary world. So for Luke, he's on Tatooine. For Rey, she's on Jakku. Excuse me. The stage two is the call to adventure. So Luke gets Leia's message. And then Rey meets BB-8 and Finn. Stage three is the refusal of the call. So Luke goes home and he sees that his uncle and aunt have been murdered. And that kind of, sets him on this journey. Stage four, meeting the mentor. So Luke has Obi-Wan, and then Rey has Han, and then Luke later on. So it comes full circle. Stage five is crossing the threshold. So for Luke, this is when they're at the cantina, Mos Eisley, when they meet Han, and he's like playing cards, and you know that whole part.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, and then for Rey, okay, so this is where it starts to kind of break down a little bit.
Okay.
So for Rey, it was a little unclear to me. I thought it could be that initial journey on the Millennium Falcon is when she crosses her threshold, or it could be her encounter with Maz Kanata. I always want to call her Nag Hammadi. But Maz Kanata, or just call her Lupita Nyong'o, because that's who it is. And then when she, discovers the lightsaber and she has the Force vision, that could be crossing a threshold, but that's also another call to adventure.
Sure.
And refusal of the call, because she's talking to Maz and she's like, no, this isn't, no.
Right.
This is not for me. I was a little unclear on that. But then stage six is test allies and enemies. So for Luke, of course, he meets Han and Chewie and he's training with Obi-Wan on the Millennium Falcon. Stage seven is approach to the inmost cave. So when Luke goes on to the Death Star.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stage eight is ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear. Stage nine is reward. 10 is the road back. 11 is resurrection. And 12 is return with the elixir.
Yeah.
So I stopped breaking it down. I don't know if you noticed. I stopped matching them up. Because when I was trying to match them up, it was clear that for A New Hope, it was, a very, one-to-one, step-by-step. It matched up pretty clearly.
Yeah.
But with The Force Awakens, it doesn't really match very well as neatly as A New Hope does. But I think the reason for that, A New Hope tells a complete and finished story. While The Force Awakens does not.
Sure.
So the deeper reason for that is the vastly different ways in which these two films came about.
Okay.
So with A New Hope, Lucas was all, I mean, he was already, like, a pretty successful filmmaker. Like, sure. He'd made American Graffiti, so. Mm-hmm. But there was still no guarantee that Star Wars would even be made, mm-hmm. let alone become, you know, the huge cultural phenomenon that it is. So I'm sure when he was writing it, you know, he was probably thinking that, like, there's a possibility that this is the only part of the story that's ever going to be told. So
yeah,
he would have to resolve in a way that feels complete and satisfying, which it does.
Yeah.
But with The Force Awakens, you know, it was like already planned to be the first of a trilogy.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Star Wars was already like this huge deal. It's yeah. like a old cultural thing now. So Rey's story doesn't resolve her hero's journey in The Force Awakens, because my theory is that her hero's journey is going to unfold over all three films.
Yeah.
So we've already seen a little bit of this in The Last Jedi, because she finally meets Luke, who's mm-hmm. her mentor. And then she crosses, I think this in The Last Jedi is when she truly crosses her threshold.
Okay.
And she has, you know, her tests and trials as she's training with Luke on that, like, very green island. And she approaches the Inmost Cave when she goes to Snoke's ship to confront / convert / flirt with Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
So we'll see her. We'll see in episode 9 how the rest of her story plays out and how it matches up with the stages of the hero's journey, or heroine's journey. Not heroine, but heroine. The heroine's journey.
Yeah.
But speaking of, this is going to seem really off topic, but I recently read this great book by Samantha Ellis called How to Be a Heroine.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, it was really good. So she, in the introduction, she actually mentions Joseph Campbell.
Sure.
So she says, in his storytelling Bible, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, Joseph Campbell says a hero must cross a border, defeat a dragon, and return with treasure that will heal his people. Notoriously, Campbell thought women didn't need to make these journeys. But I think we do. Well, I think we do too, Samantha. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
So there is kind of this whole like feminist reading of the hero's journey that's kind of risen up post-Joseph Campbell. Mm-hmm. Jane Eyre is actually often thought to be like an early and important example of the heroine's journey. You know, of women's experience in the context of this mythic structure.
Yeah.
And actually, when we look at some of the most prominent female-led stories of the past couple of decades, we can find echoes or even, like, downright retellings of that hero's journey pattern. So, like, ones that I thought of are, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
Like, every season she goes through a hero's journey cycle. Wonder Woman, which we just talked about.
Yeah. Watch the episode if you haven't.
Yeah, or listen to it.
That one.
And then also The Hunger Games, which we'll be talking about soon.
Spoiler.
But I think like in the first book, Katniss goes through the whole hero's journey cycle, and then books 2 and 3 together make a complete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. So in A New Hope, we have Leia, who's a very strong and confident female character.
Yes.
She's intelligent, she like knows what she's talking about, but it really is Luke's story that follows the hero's journey, and that marks him as the hero of the story. But I think that's why it is so significant that for this new generation of Star Wars, our hero is a woman.
Yeah.
You know, women do need to take these journeys too. Like, it is part of our you know, kind of our mythic like desire to like be the hero and you know, and like go on quests and slay dragons and absolutely. So like, I think Rey is like such a perfect like a great way to tell Star Wars for, you know, a Star Wars story for a new generation.
I think absolutely,
it's absolutely time to have a woman Jedi, because representation like
so important.
Matters.
Oh my
totally
goodness.
Matters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. So that was hard to follow. Seeing as how I'm gonna discuss the puppet.
Oh wait, puppet.
Right? I'm sitting here in my Muppet shirt, which I'll tell you why that's wrong in a second, because I didn't know either. So,
hi, Erin. I love your Muppet shirt.
Well, thank you. It was given to me by Nicole Ruiz. Oh, that was my show. Oh, my goodness. Ugh. So, I am focusing mainly on Yoda because he acts as that sage mentor, voice of reason character. But he has a very unique speech pattern. So this famous...
He's funny, he does.
Exactly. So this famous speech pattern that Yoda follows is actually called something.
That was me trying to do a Yoda impression.
I was impressed. No, I thought it was good. I think you should add that to your resume. It's good. So it's actually called the object-subject-verb speech pattern. And there's a lot of speculation about why this speech pattern is chosen for this iconic character. I'm getting grammatical. I'm a tutor. The explanations range from "that's just how it is, lady," to a more technical reason that Yoda is having all of his speech actively translated.
Ooh.
And the voice we hear is that translation being
like
voiced.
How, like Google Translate gets things like mixed up.
Okay. That's definitely proposed on the internet as being the reason. But I don't know if I'd buy into that. The through line in all of these attempts at explanation is that we don't necessarily know for sure. There's no on-record file as to why. I like to buy into the reasoning that this is how all of the creatures on Yoda's origin planet speak. And there was a funny article that I found which discussed other languages which also use object-subject-verb structure. There's a bunch of them, most notably Latin, which is interesting to me because using the same structure as Latin does for a sage character in your story makes all the sense in the world to me. Latin provided the origin for many of our most famous sayings, and many of these provide advice to the common man. Exactly. Common advice. Yeah, right? Like all of these. You can think of so many. I'm sure everyone's like shouting their favorite one at home, right? All of our two listeners.
I think there's four now.
Oh, good. Hi, guys. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Sue.
Common advice such as carpe diem or seize the day is written in Latin in this same structure. And in psychology, types of argument are still referred to by their Latin names, ad hoc, ad hominem. So it only makes sense that our sagely advice giver would speak in the same structure as Latin because so much ancient wisdom and advice is derived from Latin. And then I just wanted to add this tidbit of information. Jean Ralphio, or Ben Schwartz.
From Parks and Rec.
From Parks and Rec fame. If you haven't watched it, please go.
We might talk about it on the show sometime.
So be prepared for that episode. So Ben Schwartz was set to provide the voice of BB-8.
What, really?
He came into the process and improvised a series of lines for hours and hours and hours. You can hear, he talks about it on Comedy Bang Bang. A series of lines that were then processed by software and tweaked in order to get the beeps and boops that we hear. And SNL comedian Bill Hader did so as well.
Really?
And the two actors came in for several months and delivered hours and hours of improvised content to then be played around with in the studio in order to ensure that the inflections of BB-8 were realistic and authentic to a speech pattern that BB-8 had learned. BB-8 should be communicating using a language that had structure and rules, and this was the production team's attempt at finding that. Ultimately, though, through the playback of these recordings, the attempt was fruitless, and other methods of creating BB-8's language were sought out because the playback of this new audio created from the voice of these actors was just not kind of the magic that the team was looking for. It didn't sound right.
Oh, that's sad.
Right? I love this idea and this attempted authenticity in creating a whole new language.
It's very J.R.R. Tolkien.
Absolutely. So, Jean Ralphio, this is one client that Entertainment 720 can't quite keep up with. Sorry, you guys. So,
talk about... Okay, yeah, go for it.
No. And then just a little bit more on Muppets. Sorry, the puppets, because although Yoda is voiced by Frank Oz, who voiced most of the Muppets, but notably Miss Piggy, Grover, and a laundry list of others, most of the series, The puppetry in the films is not distinct Muppetry in fashion. Sure, it used many of the same team, but people will get very heated very quickly if you say things such as the Muppets in Star Wars. They will get up and leave the conversation.
Remember,
it happened.
Remember, Mark Hamill was on the Muppet Show.
Absolutely.
Like, so it's totally... Like,
and the puppets from Star Wars hosted the Muppet Show.
Well, there you go.
But so, I got yelled at, so I was told it's wrong.
Did you get yelled at by people on the internet?
By mean people on the internet. Yeah.
That happens, man.
They're awful. So I delved deeper into the creation of these creatures in Star Wars, because they've always, as I mentioned, they've always been my favorite part. So Phil Tippett and the Lucasfilm Creature Shop are to blame for Yoda, Ewoks, Jabba the Hutt, and all the delightful, menacing, and otherwise entrancing creatures, which really add depth and detail to the already phenomenal world that was being created. The design on these creatures is phenomenal. It should be, because later in his life, Tippett was professionally credited as dinosaur supervisor on Jurassic Park. Yes. After he worked on the first few Star Wars
Best
movies.
Title ever.
I know, I'm jealous. I went to school for the wrong thing. He really knows his stuff, and they even coerced, I'm sure it's coercion. He acted as supervisor of special effects on Twilight, because that's kind of a fallen caliber.
Aww.
But, you know, sometimes we gotta encourage the new generations, I suppose.
I mean, Twilight looked really good.
It did.
It did
look pretty good. I just hope that the sparkle...
The source material was just... Dribble. That's a discussion for another time.
Okay. I opened a can of worms. He probably felt obligated to help them, is all I'm saying. So then, the Lucasfilm Creature Shop and their Industrial Light and Magic Animation Studio... I just need to say, that name is incredible for an animation studio. The Industrial Light and Magic Animation Studio. Come on, it gives you chills. So, both Phil Tippett and then this Lucasfilm Creature Shop really work together to create the realistic spectacle of a world that we see. They've been known to create ways to capture it. The Lucasfilm Creature Shop has been known to create ways to capture the movement of dogs and other animals in order to allow for a creature or character to move authentically to the animal it's most like. And considering the special effects inherent to the Star Wars franchise, and considering that these movies premiered in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. shows you just how incredible the Creature Shop really is.
Yeah.
And then, for me, these monsters are then paired with humor, heart, and a bizarre honesty that you would not expect from a puppet. They react realistically. You can see their feelings in their eyes, and you kind of forget that it's not a real living creature. And it was this heart, as it paired with the sinister moments in the series, that created a really nuanced depiction of a completely realized world. A world housing both dark and light, a world of the Jedi and the Sith. I loved that there were good and evil at the puppet level, in the same way that there were good and evil for everybody else. Worlds on worlds, just so much nuance.
Layers.
So much. So I'll end with, in her blog post, Making Monsters, Gretchen Felker-Martin talks about how part of the magic to these puppets is that they actually drool or goo or have coarse, viscous material as appropriate. They have coarse fur and sharp claws where appropriate. These puppets feel how these creatures would feel if they were going about their lives. Phil Tippett understood that in order for special effects to look real, they have to really have these details. You can't videotape something that looks fake and call it real. We're too smart for that these days. So these monsters look and feel exactly as realistic in person as they do in the footage. Martin notes that they are good and evil, and we love them or hate them or fear them as if they're real creatures, because they live and die and get hurt realistically. We see even the evil ones triumph and fall realistically, in the same way that our parts of beloved wildlife or pets experience that triumph and fail in their lives. It's easy to be afraid of something one minute and then watch it realize its own humanity and then ooze to its death in front of us.
Humanity.
Animalistic nature.
Which, I mean, it's science fiction, so what even is human, right?
Right? Yeah, there's so much discussion of that. And you realize that there's no black and white, good and evil. There are parties that pertain to either side, but the people or animals involved are real living organisms, and I just feel like you really get that through the puppets. That was my long spiel.
So, that was lovely.
Well, they bring out a passion in me.
I'm sure. But when you were talking about Yoda, that reminded me of William Shakespeare's Star Wars by Ian Dosher.
Yes.
Because he, so I have Verily a New Hope with me right now, but in the edition that he wrote of The Empire Strikes Back, which is the first story that Yoda appears in, he wrote in the afterword, I wish I had it with me so I could like give you a direct quote, but he wrote something about how you know, in translating all of the lines from Star Wars into like Shakespearean language, he ran across a problem with Yoda.
Oh.
Because Yoda kind of already talks like a Star or like a Shakespeare character.
Yeah.
So, and I, yeah, again, like I wish I could have like read to you like the direct quote to like say like what solution he came up with. But his ideas were either to just keep all of Yoda's lines exactly the same as they are in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, not change it at all. Option two was to have everyone else talk like a Shakespeare character, but have Yoda talk like a, like, modern, like, person. Like, just be like, hey, guys, what are you doing?
I like that one.
There's no try. Like, just do or do not. and then his third option, I think, was to do, like, something like kind of in between.
Okay.
But what he actually did, I just remembered, what he actually does with Yoda is Yoda talks kind of like I think it's in haiku actually. He does, So like everyone else is in like iambic pentameter and Yoda is in haiku.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like super, super interesting, right?
I want that job to like translate these, man.
Translate Star Wars into Shakespeare. But anyway, since we have this right here, I thought maybe we should just read. We do a dramatic reading in every episode.
It's tradition.
So I think it is tradition at this point. So I think we need to do a dramatic reading from William Shakespeare's Star Wars.
I love it.
I was looking for a good scene for us to do, and I'm thinking that maybe we should do, so I think that we should read Leia's message to Obi-Wan in Shakespeare language. And then, I don't know, maybe we can read like a little bit more of the scene too, just to like kind of get an idea of like how Star Wars translates to Shakespeare.
I'd like to cast you as Leia.
Yes, I was hoping you'd say that. Okay, perfect. So, do you want to do the stage direction before I start? Okay.
Enter Princess Leia in beam projected by R2-D2.
Dear General Kenobi, many years ago thou served my noble father in the Clone Wars. Now he beggeth thee to come again and aid him in his struggle with the Empire. Sadly may I not be there with thee in person, my request to give. My ship of late hath fallen under siege, and thus my mission, bringing thee unto my cherished planet Alderaan, hath failed. Yet I have deep within the memory banks of this brave R2 unit stored the plans most vital for Rebellion's victory. My father can retrieve the plans therein, but I must ask of thee to take the droid and bring him unto Alderaan with care. The desperate hour is now upon us. Please, I beg thee, sir, oh help me, Obi-Wan. Kenobi, help, thou art mine only hope.
Exit Princess Leia from beam.
I love it.
That is so cool.
Isn't that so great?
Oh my goodness.
And then, oh, again, I wish I had brought the Empire Strikes Back one, because one of my favorite scenes, especially in the Shakespeare version of it, but also in the movie, is between Leia and Han when they're bickering back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And they're, like, Beatrice and Benedict.
Yes!
In Much Ado, which, speaking of which, so, oh, and by the way, William Shakespeare's Star Wars, Bryn Mawr Shakespeare put on a performance of it, and you can watch it on YouTube.
That's amazing.
You can watch the whole thing. But speaking of Shakespeare,
So I really kind of feel like Star Wars is more, it's like reminiscent of Shakespeare rather than being like a direct, retelling.
Sure.
But at least, you know, from what I could find, but you have like the sweeping epic story, like family dramas and court intrigues, like political drama, like deaths and battles and betrayals and prophecies, like forbidden love. And then you have like, it kind of serves as like a warning about the horrible things that power wielded by the wrong hands can, can wreak on.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So like in that vein, we have Darth Vader. I kind of see as like an analog to Macbeth, as you know, someone who like reaches for power, maybe initially with good intentions, but then that power ultimately corrupts them.
Yeah,
and they, you know, ultimately, it doesn't serve them well.
Sure.
So Darth Vader's Macbeth, but then we also have in the prequels, we have Anakin and Padme are very Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm,
you know, the forbidden,
like
star-crossed love that ends in tragedy.
Yeah.
And then, like I mentioned, we have Han and Leia as Beatrice and Benedict.
Absolutely.
From Much Ado About Nothing. And then Luke is really interesting. He kind of has, like, really, Leia and Luke and Han all kind of have, like, two separate stages. Because they have, like, who they are in the original trilogy, and then 30 years later in episodes 7 and 8, they're kind of a different... They play a different role. So Luke in the original trilogy is Hamlet.
Yes.
He's starting out, he kind of has like this plan of like avenging his father's death, but then he sees the ghost of a father figure in Obi-Wan who gives him his mission. And then in 7 and especially in 8, he's totally Prospero from the Tempest.
Totally.
And then, like, would that make Rey Miranda because she's his daughter?
Oh, she's interesting.
Is Rey Luke's daughter? I don't think she is, but that was a theory for a while. Rey is Luke's daughter.
Yeah.
I don't think she is. But I think Rey is Viola, actually, from 12th Night.
Mm-hmm,
I think she, because, you know, she washes up on the shore.
Totally.
She's like in a strange country and she's trying to survive. And
in the end, that, the few, the most recent movies, I always saw Leia as kind of a Titania. I know I say that about a bunch of people and like Titania's my girl, but she just has that like power.
She's
to
like,
her.
I'm here and like, I'm in charge and I don't care who doesn't like me because of it. I'm just going to take charge.
And she's not quite evil like Lady Macbeth. She's more of a, like, a strong Titania, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I was trying to think of, like, who Finn and Poe could be.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, Poe's maybe a little bit of a Prince Hal slash Henry V. He's got that kind of, like, rascally, like, swagger. Kind of like Han Solo.
Yeah.
Kinda, like, totally.
Yeah. I love both those men.
Finn. Was that you who was like, these are things from Star Wars that I would like to have. Captain Phasma pajamas. Like Poe Dameron. Like no product, just Poe Dameron.
Just him, just right there for me to talk about my woes. Yeah, he's good.
Captain Phasma. Well, we haven't talked about her.
Oh shoot, yeah.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then I also thought Luke and Leia as like long lost twin siblings is very Shakespeare.
Very Shakespeare.
Very Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that's, you know, that's what the plot of Twelfth Night is.
Yeah.
But then also you have like a comedy of errors. Lots of twins in Shakespeare.
So lots of
twins and like shipwrecks and
Which
there are plenty of those in Star Wars too.
Oh my goodness.
And then of course R2-D2 and C-3PO are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Of course.
Obviously.
If you didn't guess that at home, go back and read the source material.
Go back and watch watch the Mel Gibson Hamlet because it's pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch Star Wars and you'll see.
And go ahead and tell us we're wrong.
Just try it.
Just try it.
see you today.
Yeah, but speaking of which, so we talked about how the hero's journey, as popularized by George Lucas and Star Wars, has had like a really profound influence on the like subsequent pop culture.
Yeah, of course.
Since then, and you know, it's been like 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So yeah, it's been 40 years since it came out. So there's a lot that's been influenced by it. So like the things that I mentioned, like Buffy, and I would even venture to say like not just Wonder Woman, but like the entire like DC extended universe and Marvel cinematic universe, which Marvel and Star Wars are both owned by Disney, so that's not surprising. What else did I say? The Hunger Games.
Yes.
So a lot, obviously, like a lot of science fiction has been influenced by Star Wars, but really just storytelling in general.
Yeah. Or like it had that huge arc or a few episodes in How I Met Your Mother, where Ted Mosby decides whether or not he's going to date Stella.
Based on whether or not she looks tough.
Yeah, so it's part of, like, our comedy. It's part of.
And, like, Marshall tells Stella, like, this is the movie that Ted watches on Christmas Eve. Like,
absolutely.
It's like his theme.
Yeah, so it's being used to describe other characters and endear them to us. It's had a huge impact.
Star Wars is actually, like, there's tons of Star Wars references laced throughout How I Met Your Mother. If you... kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like other movies or other works that have been influenced by Star Wars. Of course, like the technology and the special effects that were pioneered by Lucasfilm in, you know, the late 70s and early 80s. Films like Alien, all the Alien films.
Like
any film that really has like really good creature effects.
Yeah.
Like Predator.
Yeah. Like the fact that you can't, like, special effects are no longer shocking to us because they're so used in everything.
So, yeah. It's so prevalent.
That's a in huge part to Star Wars, you
for
know.
For sure.
What's
our next?
I don't know why it logged me out.
Okay. Well, I think I had some photos to talk about. And I realized after our episode about Wonder Woman, I realized that like just describing a photo on a podcast is like maybe not very compelling. But I do want to talk about this just because it's so cool. And, you know, of course, we're posting, you know, all of the links and stuff that we talk about on a blog post, which is at thepopdna.wordpress.com. That's right. We have a WordPress site because...
Don't be jealous. It's not a good look.
Because we're not paying for anything.
No.
So we'll post these photos on there and you guys can check them out. So these are some fan art that I discovered last year, actually, and it's by somebody whose Tumblr handle is The Real McGee, so it's Tumblr fan art, and they are you looking at these, Erin?
They're so good.
They're so good. So obviously, like, there's tons and tons and tons of Star Wars fan art out there, but I chose these in particular just because they reflect something else that's very near and dear to my heart.
Oh, do you want to tell us?
The Regency world of Jane Austen. Which
oh,
is,
yeah.
I wish I could live there. I want to go to there. So in the first one, we have Finn and Poe, and they're like, I guess, like naval officers because they're on a ship. And, like, that's really clever. Like, they're on a ship.
Because,
like, everybody's ships, Finn and Poe.
That's true. They also
so
look kind of dang
funny.
Good.
They do look very dashing. Like, they look like they could be, like, Darcy and Bingley in a Pride and Prejudice.
Absolutely.
I think Poe is Darcy and Finn is Bingley, right?
Yeah.
That's how.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's... Yeah,
no.
You couldn't do it the other way. And then the next one is the lovely Rey. And she's very, like, so she's got a lightsaber, but her, the hilt is like a rapier. And she's looking very like Lizzie Bennet in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it. And then, save the best for last, we have emo Kylo Ren, but it's
so
like
good.
Lord Byron.
Yeah.
Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. Like, all black.
He looks dang good in that suit.
He does. Yeah. He's like, yeah, it's interesting. But he's like strangely attractive.
Yeah.
Like, and you don't know why.
Yeah. Is that masculine aura, I don't know.
And he's a bad boy.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible. Okay, let's talk about the Star Wars Reading Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is great. I don't know how you feel about reading challenges.
Oh, you know I hate reading. No, I love it. I love it.
Reading challenges. So, like we mentioned earlier, like, in the episode, there's tons and tons of novels and graphic novels and comic books of Star Wars. So we found this Star Wars reading challenge on Book Riot. And here it is. We've got a novelization of a Star Wars movie, which I read the novelization of episode 1 when it came out.
Cool.
And I was like 10 years old. And I want to just like relive the movie over and over again.
So,
I didn't realize back then like how terrible the prequels were, but that's another discussion. So number 2 is a graphic novelization of a Star Wars movie. Number 3 is the first 2 volumes of a Star Wars comic series.
Cool.
Number 4 is a Star Wars book with a female lead.
Yeah.
Number 5 is a middle grade Star Wars book. Oh, the best middle grade Star Wars books were the Young Jedi Knight series.
Ooh, yeah.
I loved those books. That was when I was in like second and third grade or something. Like, I was just like reading those books constantly. They were great. So they were about, so it was in the extended universe that got like, when Disney bought Star Wars, they basically said, like, none of those stories are canon anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was about Han and Leia's kids, Jason and Jaina, and they were, they're twins, obviously.
Yes.
And they were training at the Jedi Academy, and Luke was their teacher.
I love it.
I know, it was so great. Like, they were the best books. And now they're not canon anymore. So sad. Number 6 is a book from an Empire POV.
Ooh.
Number 7 is a book from a Rebel Alliance POV.
Gotcha.
Number 8 is a Star Wars book or comic written by AOC, which is author of color.
Yeah.
Number 9 is a Star Wars book or comic written by a female. Female what?
Not specific.
A female.
Right.
A female of any species.
We just
apparently
need to be female.
Number 10 is a Star Wars anthology. 11 is a Star Wars reference book.
I love that.
Number 12 is a book from Legends, which is like the, like, it's like 1,000 years in the past. I think they're comic books.
I was like, League of Legends?
Legends.
The game?
Yeah.
What?
Star Wars Legends.
Gotcha.
Number 13 is a book / comic focusing on Luke.
Cool.
14 is focusing on Han, 15 focusing on Leia, 16 focusing on Vader. Number 17 is free choice. Like anything that has to do with
free choice.
Number 18 is a Star Wars manual like The Jedi Path.
Okay.
Number 19 is a book from the new canon. Number 20 is a young reader's Star Wars book.
Yeah.
Number 21 is a book on the history of Star Wars / pop culture,
Star
Wars,
that.
Et cetera. So, or you could just listen to this episode.
We count for all of these.
We count for all of these. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, if you are a reader like us, you might consider, we'll link this.
Yeah.
You might consider taking the Star Wars Reading Challenge in 2019.
I sense a New Year's resolution
in
for
the
many
force.
Of you.
Yeah. You sense it in the folds.
Oh, one thing I've always wondered about Star Wars. How come some people have British accents? Some people have American accents. I mean, that...
Yeah.
I should research that. Anyway.
Something to ponder.
Something to think about.
Food for thought, really. Oh, yes.
So, if you haven't realized by now, we are terrible at coming up with endings.
But we're also the coolest people you'll ever know.
Like, yeah. So, to end this, how should we end it? Let's, maybe there's something in here that will tell us. Oh, I know what we can do.
What?
So, I'm going to read, or you can read it if you want,
you go
a line ahead. From the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes!
William Shakespeare's Star Wars. Remember me, O Luke, remember me, and ever shall the Force remain with thee.
Good advice for all of us on this Sunday evening. Thanks for tuning in.
And may the Force be with you.